Okay, I just came back from a trip to America, and I was last Shabbos in Cleveland. Anybody from Cleveland here? No. Anyone been to Cleveland? Anyone been to Cleveland? Okay, a few people been to Cleveland. Different answers to my programs? In a program or just visiting? Stan? Visiting. Okay, so I went for the wedding of a student of mine in Cleveland, and it was a very unusual Shabbos where we davened. It was the rabbi of the shul's last Shabbos. He's moving to Israel. And it was a very small shul. I think that the wedding party, which was not from Cleveland, was probably more than half of the minyan. I'm not sure they would have had a minyan even without us. But on Shabbos day, he started to speak from the congregation, from the pulpit where I am right now, in Cleveland. And he was talking about this being his last Shabbos. He's been there for like 7 or 8 years already. And he started to cry about how much he had done in the community, the people he had been affecting and impacting. And I felt very uncomfortable. I was in the back of the room. I'd never met him before in my life. I don't even know what his name was. And I'm watching him like bare his soul, pour out his heart, and start to cry about the last 7 years that he was working for this community, for these people, for these children, for these adults. I could not have felt more uncomfortable. Now I was trying to figure out, what am I so uncomfortable about? Why am I uncomfortable? So let me ask you guys, why do you think I'd be uncomfortable with that situation? I'm a regular guy. There's no like deep secret over here. Why do you think me sitting in the back of a room like that would make me uncomfortable? What's your name?
Yoli.
Yoli. Maryland? I'm also from Maryland. Where are you from?
I'm from Wisconsin, but I go to Michigan.
Close enough. I'm from Maryland and I went to school in Maryland. Okay, yeah, go ahead. Yeah. Excellent. It's like at a place for me to be there. I felt like I was intruding on a personal conversation with having with someone that he cares a lot about, and I was like a fly in the wall, but I wasn't on the wall. I was right in front of him, and he was looking at me, talking to everyone else around me. I'm watching him like get very emotional. Now, why did that impact me so much? Besides the fact I was very uncomfortable about it, because I realized something very important. It might be happening actually right now to some of you, or not now. It might happen in 10 minutes to some of you. When someone speaks with passion sometimes, and you couldn't care less what they have to say, and you listen to what they have to say, and you're like, kind of like, what are you getting so excited about? Why are you so emotional about that topic? It makes you feel uncomfortable. And I realize oftentimes when I speak in different places, whether it be my students in yeshiva, or maybe a guest lecturer right now, I might be getting really excited. And you're looking at me like, what are you screaming about, Rabbi? Like, keep it down. I'm trying to fall asleep a little bit. I don't know what you're even saying right now. So there are many times I realize this could be me many times. It could be me right now. In 10 minutes from now, you might be thinking those same thoughts. And to be in the back of a room thinking those thoughts myself about a rabbi, it got me thinking a lot about, you know, how often am I that rabbi and you are me in the back of that room trying to figure out what is he talking about? Why is he so emotional? Who cares about this lesson he's trying to give over? So I want to figure out better now, maybe someone else besides Yoli, why do you think when a rabbi gets in front of the room and gives you some passionate speech, you just don't really care about it so much? I'm assuming that some of you don't. If it's, you do, maybe why your friend doesn't care so much about it. Why do you think when a rabbi gets in front of the room and gives some passionate speech about something and you're just living like, what's he talking? Yeah, what's your name?
Joshua.
What's his name?
Joshua.
Joshua.
Just don't identify with like, you don't see like a
mic. Good. This rabbi, I don't know who he is. He's saying some message, a lesson I never really thought about or really care much for. I don't identify with the message. I don't identify with it. And therefore, I'm sitting here watching him get all excited, and you're just—it's just like we feel like we're not connecting properly. Anyone else? Yeah, your name?
Brandon. Maybe you didn't want to be there.
Okay, someone—I didn't want to be here in the first place. This rabbi is getting all excited, and I couldn't care less. But I'm watching these people, discussing and interested, and maybe want to hear, and I just don't want to be part of that process. And the more he talks, the more excited he gets, the more annoyed that I get. Hopefully, it's not what happens to you in the next few minutes. Hopefully, your name is
Azaria.
Doesn't connect to me at all. Now, what doesn't connect to you? So let's talk for a second. It doesn't connect to us. The He with a capital H, God. We all know He exists. I assume we all believe in Him to some extent. But we're not constantly thinking about Him. I don't make decisions often. I mean, I do, but maybe if I was in that room and I was your age, I wouldn't have been making decisions with God in my mind in a major fashion. It wouldn't have been. I'm going to try today, if I can, two small points, two small ideas to try to put us in a perspective where maybe the next time you hear a class by a rabbi who shows a little bit of passion, you might think, you know what, maybe if I took a little bit away from what he had to say, it would make me a better person, a better Jew. You know, I'll be more proud of myself. That's my goal today, is to kind of try to make us understand better why are we rabbis and why do we want you so much to be so passionate and to care so much. Right now we're in a very unique time of year. We finished the 3 weeks. We're now in what's called the Shiva de Nechemta. You know what that means, Shiva de Nechemta? What that means, what that refers to? Shiva de Nechemta. Okay, it refers to that we have 7 Haftorahs. We say consecutive weeks that are Nechama. What does the word Nechama mean? Good, excellent, Yoli. Consoling. Comforting. We don't need comforting over Yoli. Why do I need comforting? What happened? Good. Tisha B'Av happened. Tisha B'Av was the biggest tragedy to the Jewish people as a people. And after going through and reading, I don't know what you guys did when you were here, not here in the yeshiva, but here in the kol, but here in Israel, imagine Rabbi Michael gave you a very inspiring Tisha B'Av experience, I imagine. I imagine that hopefully you had something that impacted you more than others, I'm sure. Maybe reading some of those keynotes, certainly for me, as a parent, reading about how mothers, you know, would eat their own children, it's impossible to imagine. The way that people, that society had gotten so off, had the desperation in the air, it's nauseating. It's nauseating to listen to. And we need a lot of comfort at that point in time. So we have the Shiva de Nechemta, the 7 weeks, the 7 Haftorahs of comfort. And most that we're going to have most time by the comfort is, things will get back to normal again. We just want to be normal. We want life to be normal. I don't want to sit there and be experiencing terrible things. I'm not even looking for these exciting ones. I just want to be normal. I want to be healthy, normal healthy. I want to be able to normally walk, normally play ball, normally talk on my phone. I want to be normal. And Tisha B'Av was a time of chaos, and the Shiva de Nechemta is a time of hoping to get back to a level of normality. I'll give an example if I can, just practically. Anyone here ever lose a pencil? And you're so annoyed. It's worth 50 cents. It's worth 2 shekel. But you can't go on. Where's my? Did you leave my pencil? What's my pencil? And you're so frustrated about it. No, here's another pencil. No, I don't want that pencil. I have my pencil. Where's my pencil? Why are we getting so uptight about it? Because it's like breaking my routine. I had a pencil. It's missing. There's a mystery right now. I want to solve the mystery of who took my pencil. And until that is solved, I'm frustrated. I want normality. I want things to be normal and regular. And until that happens, I get worried. I'm annoyed. I want it to be that things are back to the way they are. I have a boy in my shir right now in the summertime that he broke his ankle before he got to the kollel. Now, I'm sure you guys know also from your trips, to have a broken ankle, a broken foot right now is a terrible time of year. I mean, it's always bad, but you can't do anything. You can't go swimming. You can't play ball at all. You can't go on any hikes. He just wants to be normal. He wants, like everyone else, just to be able to walk and to shoot around a little bit and to go on a hike. It's all he wants. He just wants to go back to a state of being normal. Tisha B'Av was a commemoration of chaos. And the 7 weeks of comfort is a time of just, we just want to get back to being normal again. I want to share with you a story of how normal changed someone's life. A story I read a long time ago in a book of Pesach Kron. It's a very moving story. If you remember nothing else but the story, it should be hopefully impactful for you as well. There was a boy named Bensi. And Bensi was an English young man. And he joined the Yeshiva of Gateshead. It's a very famous yeshiva in England. He joined Yeshiva of Gateshead. And while he was there, he was like one of the new guys in year nine, in grade nine, like starting high school age. And while he was there in Gateshead, the first few days, the kids picked on him a little bit. They would poke him and call names, and they were really, really bothering him a lot. And after like 2 or 3 days, I guess he was just getting so sick and tired of it that he decided he had enough, and he ran away from his friends while they're trying to grab him and catch him. And he goes and sneaks into the Otzer Svarim, which is the library of the yeshiva, and he locks the door behind him, and they're banging the door, "Let me in, Bensi, let me in, Bensi." He won't let them in. Let me go fast forward for a quick minute. Bensi was known in the yeshiva in general as being like the Labor Day guy, the Chevroman. He was so much fun. Everyone loved Bensi. And each year, this is after he graduated, each year, when the boys leave the yeshiva, they have big celebratory dinners for these boys. And they always called upon Bensi to speak. He'd be the one who would speak about them, and he'd have everyone laughing and stitches on the floor. He was like, this Bensi was like the Chevroman. But he didn't start that way. As he was leaving his time, when his time ended in yeshiva, after he was there for like six years, they threw a big party and of course had him speak about his experience in the yeshiva. And he told the story I'm about to tell you right now. He told the following story. He got there and he said to the yeshiva, I want to thank the yeshiva for everything he's done for me in the course of my time in Gateshead Yeshiva. But I am not thanking him for his Torah knowledge that he gave me, though he gave me plenty. I'm thanking him for a story that happened, that he saved my life, he saved my character, and even he doesn't know the story yet. So everyone's like, what does that even mean? And here's the story. Now rewind where I was beforehand. This Bensi starts the yeshiva, and he's frustrated those first few days, and he locks himself into the Otras Farm, into the library. And that library was frequented by the Rosh Yeshiva, who always would grab his farm from that library. And sure enough, as he locks himself in the library, and the kids are banging the door and saying, Bensi, let us in! Bensi, let us in! He says, I'm not letting anybody in. I need the time to myself. You guys are driving me nuts. You're making me crazy. 2 minutes of quiet, and there's a knock on the door. Bensi says, who is it? And someone says, it's Rosh Hashiva. Rosh Hashiva's here. I want to get into my library. Bensi's like, get out of here. I know it's you guys. You're playing a trick on me. No way. Open the door. I'm not having you poke me. I'm not having you bother me. I'm not opening this door no matter what you say. A minute goes past. A knock on the door. Who is it? Says Bensi. Rosh Hashiva. I really need to get into my library. And he peeks through a crack in the door, and standing in front of him is the Rosh Hashiva of this big yeshiva, where he's been there for 3 days. And he locked him out of his own library. Could you imagine how much worse it gets than that? It can't. It's humiliation galore. He decides to himself, I'm opening the door up, going straight to my room, I'm packing my bags, I'm leaving. Because I can never look the person in the face ever again, obviously. And sure enough, he opens the door, and he has the following thing. Rosh Hashiva looks like this, his eyes covered. And Bensi pauses and he waits, and Rosh Hashiva will not look at who it is. He won't even look. And Bensi scoots around the Rosh Hashiva, goes back to his room. The Rosh Hashiva never knew it was Bensi. And he says to him, the night he's leaving, 6 years later, you saved my life. You saved me. Had you glanced for a second at me, you didn't even know till this day it was me. If you had just looked at me for a second, my life would have been over. I couldn't stand to look at you. These last 6 years, I would never have been here. What you did for me, I can't even describe how much I owe you. That was the story he told. Now, what did he really do for him in the end? He gave him back normal life. He didn't invite him for a Shabbos meal. He didn't give him money or prizes. He just gave him back his normal life. For you to have normalcy in your life, to be healthy, for you to be able to function, to read, to laugh, the level that provides for you, that's all we want. We don't need any big thunder lightning shows. We just want things to work out okay for us. I think if you think about that for a little bit of time, in these 7 weeks, we're right now in the middle of the second one right now, we're not asking God for some fancy footwork right now. We just want things to be regular. Just want normalcy back. I don't want to read about mothers cooking up their children and eating them. I don't want to read about murder and people who are traitors to the Jewish people. I don't want to read about that anymore. I just want things to be okay. If that's how we look at the world from now on, the next 7 weeks, then we're getting somewhere to our connection. But I want to go one step further if I can. We're right now, we just passed a very important day, a little less than a week ago, called the 15th of Av. Tu B'Av. Anyone ever hear of this day, Tu B'Av? Anyone ever hear of it beforehand? What's Tu B'Av? What is it? Okay, so good. When I was in camp also, what's your name?
Elon.
When I was in camp, we told the girls the same thing. It's Jewish Valentine's Day today. The girls get their white clothes on. They kind of frolic in the field, right? So that's what we're told. It's a time certainly of marriage. It's a time that's conducive to marriage, to shidduchim. For sure, it's true as Elon's saying. Anyone else know what happened on Tu B'Av? Why is it a day of that? Why is it Jewish Valentine's Day, as you called it? What about it? What happened? It was just like we just need some Valentine's Day. We might as well pick the 15th of Av. Like, it's right, at least less than a week later than Tisha B'Av. You'd imagine we should be recovering from our mourning. All of a sudden, we're like, hey, guys, get your white clothes on. Let's pick those girls. We're gonna get engaged and get married. What happened on the 15th of Av that was a moment to appreciate? Anyone know what happened on the 15th of Av? So the Gemara in Titus says there are 7 things that happened. I'm going to fast forward through most of them. But I'll tell you 3 things quickly what happened. Things became normal. When there was not normal, they just became normal again. For example, there were these women, these daughters of a person named Slavka, and they were told they could inherit the land of Israel only if they married within their same tribe. For reasons that are technical, I don't get to right now, technical reasons. They had to marry within their same tribe. They were limited, they had only married within like 10% of the Jewish population. Frustrating. You're limiting who you can marry. So in the end, when they were given the right to marry everyone else, all the other tribes of Israel, it happened on Tu B'Av, the 15th of Av. Another story we have also, with one of the tribes of Jewish people who were also, they were put into like a cherim, they were set aside as people you could not marry into, and they were given the chance to be married again on Tu B'Av. Just normalcy. Things that were abnormal became normal once again. That's a cause for celebration. When things are off, and then they're fixed, we breathe a sigh of relief, and we feel very much connected to what's happening around us. There's one more thing that happened that I want to share with you quickly. It's much more related to Tisha B'Av. On Tu B'Av, we're told the following thing took place. Anyone know what happened every Tisha B'Av in the desert? Anyone know what happened? We're in the desert for 40 years before we get to Eretz Israel. What happened every single Tisha B'Av? Anyone know what happened? I'll tell you what happened. Every year, the Jewish people would dig graves, their own graves. They would lie down in the graves that they dug themselves. They'd say goodbye to their wife and children, maybe forever. They'd lie down in the graves. At Tisha B'Av night, X amount of them would not wake up. They'd be already buried in their own graves, and then the camp would go on, and they would bury, put this dirt over them, and they'd move on. Every single Tisha B'Av. You know why it started that way? What happened in Tisha B'Av that started this process going? Anyone know what happened in Jewish history in Tisha B'Av? Yeah. Excellent. What's your name again? Remind me again.
Brandon.
Brandon reminds us the story of the Meraglim. The tribes came back with a negative report and they started to cry. Shem says, you're crying over what? For no reason? I'll give you reason to cry. Every single Tisha B'Av from now on, you will be crying. And in the desert, it manifested itself as digging your own graves, saying goodbye to your wife and kids, who knows forever, just till the next morning, and lying down in your own graves. And for 40 straight years, every time they lie down, the next morning there'd be a voice of Bas Kol that would come out from heaven and say, whoever is still living, come and rejoin the living. And X percentage would, and the other Y would stay where they were because they were no longer alive. The 40th year in the desert, the Bas Kol comes out again, and every person the night before who lied down got up again. They thought maybe the calendar was wrong. They lie down the next night. And again, we all rise the next day. The next night, until finally comes the 15th of Av. If you're lying down on the ground, looking upwards, 15th of Av, what do you see? In nighttime, what do you see? What's that? Stars. What else besides the stars? What kind of moon do you see the 15th of Av? A full moon. Excellent. You know for sure it's not what day? It's not the 9th, right? The 9th would have been a partial moon. And they realize in the 15th of Av, miracle of miracles, the plague had stopped. And we're now welcome back to be alive again. And that day is a very happy day for that reason. We stopped dying. Now, if you think about it for a second, when do we really stop dying? What's that? Okay, true. When? What day do we stop dying, really? The 9th. That 9th of Av, we stopped dying. Why am I celebrating the 15th of Av then? It was 6 days later. I only found out about it later on, but it really happened the week earlier. Oh, what's your name? Aaron? When we realized. Why celebrate when we realized versus when it happened? Why do I celebrate when we realize it happened versus when it actually happened? You're 100% correct, Aaron. But why celebrate then? Okay, good. Excellent. I'll say more of that. Very good. You're following my shear. I appreciate that. Everything is back to normal. Listen to the following idea. Picture the following scene. You guys ever have like a secret admirer, mystery Maccabee, Hanukkah Harry, one of those things where you kind of give someone some gifts, they don't know who it is yet? You ever have that happen?
Nope.
Never? Yeah. So I'll tell you that this happens. What happens is you have a secret admirer, a Jewish version of it, and you go and you find his favorite candy bar and you stick it in his locker, and later on he finds it, he's like, wow! And you're like, yes, he's so happy. Are you closer to him now than you were beforehand or not? Why not? He doesn't know it's you yet. But when the reveal goes, the final reveal, 2 weeks later, whatever it is, and he finds out it was you, all the emotions, all the excitement rushes forth, and now you are as close as could be. When we were lying in our graves at Av and we stopped dying, we didn't know we stopped dying. We couldn't appreciate we stopped dying yet. becomes the 15th of Av. We look in this big moon, and it can't be any more than 9th. It's just not the right moon for it anymore. We realize the decree is over, and we are so thankful to God. We're thankful. And therefore, now we can realize what He's done for us. And when we realize what He's done for us, we now have a greater connection to Him, with a capital H. I think this idea of connection is perhaps the most important point of relating to God. You know how to love God? How does one love God? How does one fear God? So the Rambam brings down the following idea. In his Sefer of Hilchos Deos, he says, you know how you love God? Walk outside and look at a sunset. Look at it. You all flew here, I assume. No one here is from Israel. No one took a boat here. You all from Israel? Beit Shemesh? We're neighbors. I'm not Beit Shemesh. You're Beit? What's that? Regular? Regular. I don't take it personally. I'm the irregular Beit Shemesh. I'm irregular. Fine. Your name again is?
Tani.
So besides Tani, everyone else took a plane here? Okay. You look at anyone here. I'm a big window seat guy for two reasons. Number one, I like to sleep. The window's much easier to sleep with. Number two, I love looking out the window in the middle of the flight. Do you ever like look around and you're like, what? Like, look at these mountain ranges. They're nothing up here. And when you start to land even, and you see like cars, and they're like little like toy cars look like to you. And you start to realize, what a world. I'm awed at the world that God created. When you start to like put things in perspective and just realize things, you take a step back and you're just like, you couldn't even see yourself. Right now, if you were on the plane right now, you wouldn't even notice yourself. You couldn't see yourself. You're so small. We're so small. With luck, you'd see the campus we're in right now. But each individual person, impossible to see. Impossible. That should create a level of like love of God. What a wondrous thing that He did in the world. If we asked for Michael or his parents, you know, mentioned his grandmother passed away. You know, she gave them life. She gave life. There wouldn't be no life without her. God gives us life. It just requires us to take a step back and think about it. You know how you go to fear God? You know how you work in fearing God? To realize at any point in time, it could all go away. As you're in that plane, you hit some turbulence maybe, starts to shake, everyone buckle your seats. You're not really worried. You're not really worried. It's part of the flight. But for a second, if you would even think, I'm uncomfortable right now. This is more than I remember ever shaking before. I'm afraid. I'm terrified. That feeling that you have, every single waking moment, people could say, what if God one day would take away my eyesight, my ability to breathe, my normalcy, my just acting in a regular way? That's terrifying. We don't think about it so much. And therefore, we don't love so much. And we don't fear so much. But it's normal to love God if you think about it. It's normal to fear God if you think about it. We just want to get back to a state of being normal again. Normal means you appreciate what's around you. But let me ask you the following question. Who here, you know, let's say we assume it's true. If I would think about God more often, if it would be more normal to me, I'd love Him more, I'd fear Him more. But, you know, none of us, maybe you are, but I'm not. Any big deal. I'm not a big deal. A regular guy. Does it matter if I serve God? Well, I was in the airport. I mentioned before I was flying to Cleveland. So when I was in New York waiting to get to Cleveland, so a famous athlete walked right by me. Lance Stevenson. He walked right by me. So I was going to blow in his ear, but I thought he wouldn't appreciate that so much, so I didn't. I know I should have, but I didn't. No, I did not do that, but I didn't say anything at all. I didn't say anything to him. You know why I didn't say anything at all? Because he's just a regular guy. What's that? He's on the Lakers now. It's true, but that's not why I decided him. I decided because he's a regular guy. All I decided him versus the guy next to me in the seat next to me. They're both those people. I didn't want to run to the guy next to me, so I'm not going to run to Lance Stevenson and say hello to him either. Why should I say hello? Because he's on TV beforehand. Makes a lot of money. He throws a ball into a hoop. I also like doing that. He's better than I am, obviously. But I'm not going to run over him and say hi for that reason. He's just a regular guy. Now, it happens to be that we're all somewhat regular guys. We're somewhat regular guys. I saw someone else in the airport on the way from Israel before I got to America, who also was a famous athlete, at least when I grew up. You probably never heard of him at all, but he's a famous athlete. He's actually a Baal Tshuva. Now he's religious. His name is Daron Sheffer. If you ever heard of him beforehand, but you can check him out later on. He played for UConn with Ray Allen. He was a starting point guard. He was one of the best Israelis that ever played in college basketball. I remember him growing up. He was in the airport in line in front of me in Israel. I really want to go over to him and say to him, like, Daron, like, tell me what's going on in life. Can I get an autograph? Why? Because he's a hero. You know why? Because he passed up fame and fortune. He just became a regular from June. Regular guy. He doesn't have a posse walking with him. And that's, I don't mean that in a racist term, like you know, like Phil Jackson said it over. He's just a regular person. But he made himself from. He found God. He looked around, opened his eyes and found God. He's a regular person. But you might think to say about yourself, being a regular person, what does that really do for me? Can I be great? If I'm not going to be a great person, if I'm not going to be anything so special, so why do I put so much effort into getting close to God or make my life meaningful? So there happens to be a great story that happened, I think it was this year, I'm pretty sure it was this year, of a basketball player for the Los Angeles Lakers named Andre Ingram. You ever heard of him beforehand?
Yeah. Oh.
Your name is again, you remind me again?
Azaria.
Who's Andre Ingram? Not 40. Don't exaggerate. He's not 40. He's mid-30s. Good. Excellent. And what happened? So he scored the most points ever in NBA history for his first time playing after it being called on a certain date. That's like his... Now, that's very nice. He scored a lot of points in a single game. The next game, he only scored like 5 points, by the way. He played 2 games. So he scored 5 points. That probably won't make it to the film later, his life film. But the first game was a big deal. How many people scored? You know, many people scored more than he did during the course of the NBA season. What made his story special? What made it special? True. Let's say he played the D-League for no years. Let's say he was a 35-year-old guy who was like he used to stock toilet paper on the shelves in Walmart, let's say. Would it still be special, his story?
Yeah.
Probably. What makes it special? Because he's an average guy. He's an average person. He's not much different. He's a better ball player than we are. But he's a guy struggling to make ends meet. You know what he does for a living? He tutors in math for a living. He's an average guy. And he had a moment that was above average. Had even an above average guy had one like that, no one would notice it. It wouldn't be anything you cared about. Because we are average and normal and regular, every single thing that you do becomes above average, extraordinary. You coming to this summer to spend time in Israel on a program dedicated to connect more to the land is above average. It's above average. And you have the opportunity from this point forward to be recognized by your peers as being above average because you were just like them. But you made a decision that was different. And you now can stand out. Being average gives you the opportunity to stand out when you act in a way that's above average. I'll take someone else who was born average. The person we're told in Tanakh who was born average. There's only one person that I know of in Tanakh who's described as being average. His name was Shmuel Hanavi. Chana, his mother, prayed for a child and she asked, "Give me a child who's a Zera Anashim." He's a child among people. Just a regular guy who will blend in. Created average. But he became extraordinary. How? Why? Because he lived his life feeling, I want to make a difference. Andre Ingram had a moment in time that no one who ever followed basketball at that period of time will ever forget, myself included. I watched every highlight I could find afterwards. I tried to, everyone, when Chris Paul and him were schmoozing before he walked into the game, every highlight you can imagine, I watched it. Because you associate with people who are average, but when they become above average, you respect them so much more. If LeBron James had a triple-double, I wouldn't care to watch the game. He has those all the time. He's a great basketball player. But Andre Ingram, that single game, I will sooner watch the Andre Ingram movie than the LeBron James movie. Because I relate to what it means like to be a regular person and to have them have their moment in the sun and to shine. To be average is a great gift that God gives you. Because when you're able to take your abilities and become great, everyone will take notice of it. Everyone remembers it. There's a great rabbi, one of the earlier Gera Rebbes, named the Sfas Emes. And the Sfas Emes, I'll tell you over here, I think, a secret on how to be great. The Sfas Emes died at the age of about 57. And when his sons were burying him after he passed away, they were leaving the burial site, one said to the other, "At least our father had Arichas Yamim." What's the word Arichas Yamim mean? What's that? Long days, right? Which means usually means a long life. So the son says to his brother, the other brother says to the brother, long days, long life. What are you talking about? He's 57 years old. In no era in history is that called a long life. So his brother responded, I didn't say he had long years. I didn't say that. I said he had long days. You know what a long day is? It means you wake up in the morning, and until you sleep at nighttime, you are making a difference. That's a long day. You know, as parents, you know what a long day is? You wake up in the morning, your kid wakes up at 3 in the morning, you wake up and you help him out, and you give him what he needs, change the diaper, give him a bottle, comes home with a scratch on his knee, put a band-aid on it, give him a bath. Nighttime, wakes up at 11 at night, 1 in the morning, whatever, again. You pass out at 2 in the morning. That's a long day. It's a very, but you know what was long about it? Because every second of your day, you worked to help somebody else. You made a difference. The brother says to his brother, our father lived very long days. I can't tell you how many times I've watched people with their phones, swiping, playing, just, I'll use the word, the phrase, it's called killing time. You heard the phrase before, killing time? You heard the phrase before? Yeah, it's a famous phrase, killing time. You know what it means? It means literally, it means like, I want to burn my time. I just don't want to do it myself. Like, what am I supposed to do today? Give me a phone. Let me play for 2 hours going like this, back and forth. That new Helix game, the with the bouncy balls, right? Playing that right now? Anyone playing that right now? No? Anyways, so that game is like, that's what's called killing time. You're just like, for what? What are you doing right now? What are we doing? What are we trying to do? God gave me currency. You know what my currency is? It's life. There's a movie. I never saw the movie. Don't accuse me of singing it, but I'll quote it to you anyways, because one of my students told me about this topic later on. It's called, I think, In Time. Is it Justin Timberlake? Was there a movie, In Time, or something like that? Something with time? In Time it's called, or no? In Time. What was it about? What was currency? Their life. Right? They instead of getting money, they got years. They got seconds. They got minutes. That's all you have in the world is life, is time. And when you're zocha to live a long life and a fulfilled life, I mentioned right now, this is in memory, you know, of Michael's grandmother. The fulfilled life means that you leave the world with arichas yamim. I don't know how many years they live, but every single day when you live with meaning, it makes the biggest difference. And when you're average and you live with meaning, it makes an even bigger difference, because no one expected it from you. And when you rise like an Andre Ingram above people's expectations, and you're better than average, even though you're born average, it's a game changer. And I'll tell you one last point and then I'll stop. In Parshas Nasa, we're told there's a count. There's a count. Hashem would want the Jewish people to be counted. Moshe Rabbeinu went to collect and count each person. And it's called Nasa. When Hashem counts everyone, it's called Nasa. You know what the word Nasa means in Hebrew? Tani, what does Nasa mean in Hebrew? Naso, yeah, what does it mean? What's that? No? Okay. It means to lift up, to raise up. Naso is to raise up. Why is the counting called raise up? Imagine the following scene. They want to count. People are here. Picture, we'll go back to LeBron James again. Okay? We'll just borrow LeBron James. And they want to take a census. How many of you are in this town? And they count, okay. 1, 2, LeBron James 3, Elon 4, right? What's that? I'm worth value of 1, and so is LeBron James, so is Moshe Rabbeinu. I have the value of 1? You mean in God's eyes, I count just like Moshe Rabbeinu and Aaron a Kohen? And Nachshon Ibn Adav and every person who's in the Hall of Fame in Tanakh, I count the same number as them? Nasa, that lifts me up. In God's eyes, I'm an equal. Now, why should you be an equal to them? They're greater than we are, aren't they? So I'll give you an example. And again, Goldman certainly can understand this point, and anyone who's a parent that gets it, as a kid, you won't get it yet. Maybe you will, but it'll be hard for you to get it. I have 6 children. I have 2 sets of twins. My boys are 16 years old, close to probably the same age as you are, I assume. We're almost 16-year-old. They'll be 16 in a few weeks from now. My girls are 14, twin girls, 14 years old. I have a 9-year-old. I have a 6-year-old. My 9-year-old right now is working on, and maybe a little behind schedule, I don't know if it's like in America, but he's working on tying his shoes. Okay, I don't know what age you learn to tie your shoes. I think I learned earlier than 9, but my kid's a, Baruch Hashem, he doesn't care about tying, he gets Velcro. Anyways, trying to tie his shoes. When he ties his shoes well on his own, you know what I do with him? I say, Yechiel, call Kavod. Come here and get a little treat. My 16-year-old son says to me, what? I tie my shoes? Where's my treat? My 6-year-old daughter, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, went to the bathroom by herself. Atara, kol hakavod. What snack do you want? 4-year-old daughter says, what do you mean? I go to the bathroom myself. Where's my snack? Now, you'd be like, you know, get to, you're 14 years old. Like, you know, you went to the bathroom last 10 years by yourself. You don't need a snack right now. But she feels like, why? I don't understand. Like, why should they get ashik? And the reason why, that each person independently has their own set of expectations. And when you surpass your expectations, then you are a hero. You'll never get to Moshe Rabbeinu, nor will I. But no one cares. No one cares. Andre Ingram's second game was a flame out. He scored 5 points. But no one cares. Because he had one great game. He'll be better remembered, maybe, than some people who go to the Hall of Fame one day. Because they normally played well, but this guy did something that he should never have done in his life. He scored 20-some-odd points. 19 points, there was 19 points. 27? Yeah, I don't remember what it was. But a lot of points. A lot of points at the Forum, and you know, in the Lakers, in Staples Center. A lot of points. He should never have been there. Because we're created average, the opportunity presents itself for us to become great. Because anything that you do above expectation, you are a hero. And it all starts really now. It really started before, but I'll remind you about it right now. Now, some of our talk, and I'll conclude. It's hard for us, when someone's speaking in front of us, to get connect to it, because we don't really see God so much. And I may get emotional and passionate, but you're like, Rabbi, what are you screaming about? Just like, let me have my time to myself now. It's quiet time, nice air conditioning. Just let me close my eyes a little bit. Which some of you took advantage of, and kol hakavod to you for doing it. So I'm not offended by it. I would do the same thing if I were you also. But maybe next time you'll think a little bit and say, what's he speaking about so passionately? That's right. I remember I heard one time a rabbi tell me that if I was able to find God, like me in that classroom, in that shul, with that rabbi so passionate, I couldn't relate to him. I didn't know his story at all. I didn't know what he's excited about at all. But now there's a person who's sharing with you that God and you could have a really good relationship, actually. If you understood and realized how much he does for us, you give an Ava, a level of love for that. And if you understood how much we rely and need him, and otherwise things could go awry and terribly, like on an airplane, then you'd be at all afraid of him. And if you understood that when you're average, it's actually the greatest opportunity to make the biggest difference in the world, then maybe you can tap into the excitement that right now that awaits you from this point forward. Because you're going to go back to your homes, and everyone's going to wait to see, new, how was the summer? And you left as an average person. And if you act above average, and you can fill the blank what that means, maybe you'll be careful with how you talk, the words that you say, respecting your parents more, trying to go to davening more often, taking some time to being a better person, where you keep outside with pride and helping some lady cross street, whatever you want to plug in, no one will ever forget about it. I'll end with one last story. My son Yechiel, who I mentioned, is 9 years old. My wife had him in America about a month and a little bit ago, and they were in the Metropolitan Music and Museum in New York. National History Museum, Natural History in New York. And my wife, he had to go to the bathroom. My wife had to take a bathroom. He's 9 years old. He didn't want to go by himself to a strange location, a strange bathroom. My wife waited in line in the family bathroom to take him to the family bathroom. And it was a long line. A lot of people had to go to the family bathroom. They had, you know, young children and parents. And there was a woman. An older woman and her daughter, maybe the woman was like 75, 80 years old. Her daughter maybe was like 60, 55 years old. And she was waiting in line. And the woman was, my wife could see with my son Yechiel, that she was a little bit of pain waiting to go to the bathroom. So my son was like 2 people from the front of the line. And she was a little bit back, like 2 people behind her. So my wife said to my son Yechiel, how bad do you have to go? Can you let the other woman go in front of you? And he says, I'm happy to do that. And so my son, my 9-year-old son, says to the woman, the grandmother, and the mother and the daughter, would you like to take my place on line? I'm almost done. And she was so appreciative. And she did. She took her place online. And when she came out, she said to my son, here, take some money. I want to pay you money for your kind deed. My 9-year-old son says, money? I don't want to. You don't need any money. He's wearing a kippah. She says to him, you should be blessed. I bless you. You should have a long life. What did he do? He offered a woman his spot in the bathroom. Big deal. Because no one does that. It's unusual to do. And when you act in an unusual way, in a positive way, then you go from being average to an Andre Ingram level of above average, of famous. Everyone's going to talk about you. You know what happened when I was the other day in the bathroom? This young Jewish boy, he gave me a spot in the bathroom. You know what everyone else in line, by the way, did? Everyone else in line, they said to them, no, my wife, don't lose your place. You stay where you are. Such a nice thing that your son just did. everyone took notice of it. Because it's not to be expected. I'll give you the following blessing, the following bracha. Maybe we're all average. I assume we're somewhere in the average range at least. Hashem counts you like he counts Moshe Rabbeinu. You're both valued at one person worth. And when you're average, you have the opportunity to rise well above expectations. And to commemorate the passing of a loved one who was a grandmother means that they put time into raising generations. And the lesson that you, if you take from this lesson, is you go to Aliyah for Neshama, you should all be Zocha to be able to build up our portfolio in Shemayim and become great heroes to people around us. Have a great rest of your summer. You have a question?
Yeah.